Hello, everyone, and welcome to RollSpark. I'm your host, Helen Murphy. We love sharing stories about entrepreneurs succeeding from wherever they may choose to work, and especially learning about the innovative ways that they do that. I was pleased to recently come across a story about a woman on Cape Breton Island in Nova Scotia who's building her own business through partnerships and collaboration, both close at home and beyond our borders, largely thanks to a new way of networking. Tara Milburn also has a very modern type of business. It's called Ethical Swag. And I asked her about this space, about business opportunities around ethics and sustainability. Turns out it's a growing opportunity for entrepreneurs. Here's Tara to tell us her story. Hello, Tara, and welcome to the podcast.
Hi there.
How are things in Cape Breton today?
Beautiful and sunny and wintry.
Ah, yes. You know, a lot of people go to Cape Breton during the summer and fall, maybe spring, but it can be beautiful in the winter as well. And I'm sure you're seeing some of that today.
I love the winter. It's a beautiful place in the winter and the summer.
And as I think we're going to get into, it's actually a nice place to do a business that can reach out to anywhere around the world. And we're going to talk about your experience with that. Of course, on the RollSpark podcast, we like to share tips and ideas around innovative approaches to small business and things that can really in particular work for people in small and rural communities. So that's what drew me to your story. And it's really the genesis and the backstory of your business that I want to dig into. But first, why don't you give us the big picture view of what Ethical Swag is? What do you do?
Ethical Swag sources products that you put logos on at its most simplistic. So if you look anywhere in the world, promotional products are ubiquitous. They're absolutely everywhere. And Ethical Swag sources products according to strict social and environmental concerns for organizations, so that when an organization chooses a product with Ethical Swag, that they know that we've dug in and they're buying something ethically.
Perfect. And it sounds like there's, you know, all kinds of reasons that it's a good time to get into that kind of business. I'll ask you a little bit more about that later. But for some entrepreneurs, they really have to be at the right time in their life to make that leap and make it work. And I understand from our chat a few days ago, when you first had the idea for this business, you weren't ready. So some time passed in between. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So I had the idea for Ethical Swag in 2010. I don't come from this industry whatsoever. When I looked at it, I said, why is there such a disconnect? Because there was an organization that was spending tens of millions of dollars on sustainability, but it wasn't being translated into the products they were giving away. And I quickly looked at it and said, oh, there's an opportunity there. And actually, let me back up even more. I have two daughters and a son, and I'm not originally from Cape Breton. However, I moved here from Vancouver and I was born and raised in Montreal. What I did notice when I was here, that there was not a lot of women that were in business, like export oriented large business. Mm. And I found that my daughters didn't see that as an avenue for themselves, if that makes any sense. And so when I came up with the idea of Ethical Swag, I did it not thinking that I was going to give up my full-time job. It was more around showing my daughters that if they see an opportunity, they can sort of move and do things around it. And I thought it would be kind of a fun thing to do with them, to be honest. You know, I had a corporate job that paid very well, and I had kids that were in school and getting braces. And a month after I incorporated Ethical Swag, my elderly parents' house burnt down, and they lived in Montreal. So I had a lot of personal things going on, and it was never, you know, it wasn't the right time to jump into entrepreneurship, quite frankly. But right. I thought, that's okay. That doesn't matter. So I came up with the name and I incorporated and just sort of left it off to the side. I told the CEO that I was working with at the time, I have this, I'm not planning on leaving my job. I'm going to stay. It's just, I don't want to do it and have you not know that I have this sort of also. Right. And that was kind of how it was left, quite frankly.
So fast forward, is it 7 years we're talking about later?
Yep.
So when you finally did launch in 2017, you learned how impactful networking can be for your business, especially networking with women. And you found a way to do that successfully from anywhere, which I think is really appealing to rural entrepreneurs. So how did that unfold?
Networking is so important, right? especially, you know, our business is completely online and we don't meet our customers. However, it's really important that you spend time connecting with folks that align with what you're doing. For mentorship, for, you know, identifying networks to sort of tap into, for learning, you know, all of those different things. I found that predominantly 80% of our customers were women, which I thought was really interesting. Mm-hmm. And so, and I've always really worked in male-dominated industries. I haven't spent a lot of time working with sort of just women, but I found our customers were women. And three people actually said, you should go to this event. And it was a women-only event that was happening in British Columbia. And I was like, oh, I don't know. I don't know if I want to do a just a woman thing. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I've always worked with men and women and very much enjoyed it. But I thought, after the third person said, you should give this a try, I thought, okay. And it was just a small gathering of female entrepreneurs. And it was amazing. It was not what I expected. I don't know what I expected when I went, but I really enjoyed meeting other women entrepreneurs that were sort of in the trenches the way I was, trying to sort of, you know, a lot of them had very successful businesses, so I was able to learn from that as well. But through that very small group, I then became part of a larger group network of women. And through Facebook and WhatsApp and different places, it's an online network of women that say, I want to do some employee share. You know, does anybody have any experience with that? Or, you know, it's just a chat room where people sort of share their successes, their challenges, ask questions, and that sort of thing. And I'm telling you, it's been key to our growth, is that those connections that I've made through that group.
Wow. So you can just throw out a question to the group and there's someone somewhere is going to have an answer for you.
Absolutely. So by way of example, ClearBank is something in Toronto. I didn't really know a whole lot about it. It's around money for marketing for e-commerce businesses. So mm-hmm. I'd sort of seen it. I've done a little bit of research into it, but I was like, I wonder what this is all about. So I put that into the group and just said, does anybody have any experience with ClearBank? And it was really interesting. I had several people say, no, I don't have any experience, but I want to follow this thread because I'm curious too. And then somebody else said, oh, I don't, but somebody I know has used ClearBank. So I immediately just said, could you make an email introduction? I'd like to have a conversation with them. Mm-hmm. And they did. So it's somebody that I would never otherwise have met. Through that conversation, I was asking her about her business and how she scaled and some of the things that she, you know, tactically, some of the things that she's done. And she spoke about somebody that she works with in San Francisco. I'm like, oh, I'd love their name. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I got their name, had a conversation. I've now since hired them. So, you know, wow. It started with that sort of online chat. Anybody know anything about ClearBank? And it's now turned into a relationship that I have with somebody in San Francisco that's doing some work on our behalf.
Wonderful. So are there places like on LinkedIn and other places that some of our listeners, you would recommend they go and look for to find some networks, this one or other ones like it?
So I didn't find this one through LinkedIn. It was, ironically, I was in Starbucks.
It was an old school introduction?
Somebody was listening to my call. I was having a business meeting in Starbucks and somebody was listening in and just leant over and said, I love the name of your company. Can I just butt in?
That's amazing.
And yeah, it was kind of amazing. And then she knew somebody and she said, oh, you need to try out this women retreat. And I was like, oh, I never do that kind of thing, you know? Mm-hmm. And then somebody else said it. And then somebody else said it. And I thought, okay, you know what? I don't know where this is going to lead. And I don't really know what this is all about. So I personally didn't use LinkedIn. It was actually a personal, I had a random stranger in Starbucks mention it, but then also I had somebody that I knew bring it up. And then I went, okay. And I think that that is why networking is so powerful. Right. You can do all the research that you want to do online, but when somebody that you trust says you should try this, and we know that in business, right? When you're, I think that that's a key piece is when someone says, oh, you should try this product, it's very different than if you're just being advertised to. Or ClearBank, by example. I saw the advertisements. I wasn't ready to do it until I spoke to somebody that had some experience with it. And I think that that's where our networks are so incredibly important.
Right. And what's the online network where you can put out questions and that sort of thing? What's that called?
So it's this group of women. It's called Dovetail. Mm-hmm. And it's a woman out of Toronto that started Dovetail for female entrepreneurs. Wow. And this person in Starbucks said, oh, you need to look into Dovetail. Because I was talking about CEO. So CEO is another sort of women-led, women-focused network that looked really interesting. And I was just looking at that, didn't know what it was, but then somebody else said, you should check out Dovetail. And then when the third person said it, I said, okay, I'm just going to check it out. I'm just going to kind of go blind and I'm going to give it a whirl, because you got to show up to things too, right? You can't just sit behind your desk and hope for the best.
Right. And that's a big trip for you when you actually, you know, bit the bullet and decided to go to Vancouver for something you weren't sure was going to be a good match for you and you weren't sure what you were getting into. That's a big leap of faith.
It really was. And it was more of a, I'm just going to do this and I'm going to go without any expectation. Mm-hmm. Because I didn't know what to expect. And so the more I tried to analyze it with my business brain, the more I talked myself out of it.
Right.
And so my gut said, you should go because three people have told you to go. Mm-hmm. And my brain was saying, it's expensive, it's far, you've got a lot of work to do.
Yes, we all tend to have that kind of brain, I think, and we listen to it a lot.
Yeah, and so I went with my gut. Yeah. And to be frank, it felt a little decadent. I'd lived in Vancouver. A big part of my career had been in Vancouver. And so I was like, okay, I'll go to Vancouver and I'll have a couple of meetings out there. We have clients in Vancouver. And because it was actually in Tofino, so like it's a really hard place to get to.
Yeah, but beautiful. But,
oh, so beautiful. So I thought, if nothing comes from it, I will have had a few days in a beautiful place with people I don't know.
Exactly.
it was a complete leap of faith. And even while I was there, because when I arrived, they were very specific. This is a no pitch zone.
Ah, good.
No pitch zone. You're like, so I didn't even know what businesses the women I was talking to were in. It was just a really interesting experience. And when I left, I was like, I've got a feeling that was really profound, but I actually can't articulate exactly why or how. So I just did it. And then they had another one. That was a small group of women. It was only 40 women, more seasoned sort of entrepreneurs. And then they had another event in September in Ontario, a lot easier to get to, with like 200 women. And it was more women that were looking to build their career. So it was a little bit different focus. And I wasn't going to go to that one. And I thought, no, you know what? I'm just going to go. And it was by going that I met people that... It's been, I can't even tell you how profound it has been in terms of me getting out of my small place in Cape Breton Island and getting exposed to, connected to, and working with people all over North America.
That's a really important lesson, Tara. And I think it was something that's interesting about your experience is that you've had this great online experience, but you know, you're stressing obviously that it's important to marry that with, you know, seizing those personal contact opportunities. That's obviously been a big differentiator for you.
It really has, because you get to know people when you go to these events, you get to know people at a different level. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's really important as well, because then, like I would say weekly, I get referrals from women that I've met on these two events.
That's amazing.
And it's because they've met me as a person. And they have, you know, they kind of know what we're about at Ethical Swag. They know what kind of business I'm building. And they don't hesitate about referring their network into Ethical Swag because they've met me personally.
Right.
So there is that personal element that's important.
I want to pause briefly here to say a word of thanks to our sponsor, ExploreNet, for supporting the Rural Spark discussion. I think we can all agree that rural areas of Canada should have access to the same amazing internet technologies as our biggest cities. And what's so interesting about ExploreNet, their network is bringing 5G-ready technology to rural Canadians even before it gets delivered to urban areas. You can learn more and check out what ExploreNet services are in your area by visiting ExploreNet.com. That's ExploreNet.com. And I really love how you've been surprised at every turn, right? So, you know, you have an analytical business brain and business education, and you thought certain things and those preconceived notions were, you know, dismissed time and again. And one of them, I think, was that you had a pretty clear idea of who you thought your customers were going to be. And then when you actually get the business up and running, you found that those people weren't really your customers at all. Tell us about that.
Wow, that was such an aha moment. I don't come from this industry. I didn't know anything about the industry. It was just my gut telling me there's a gap in that market. And so I always wanted to be an entrepreneur. I didn't know what the business was, but I had a list of things that the business had to be, if that makes any sense. Because we chose to live in Cape Breton, you know, I knew that I didn't want Cape Breton to be my market. I wanted North America to be my market.
Right.
So that was one of the things that I knew, right? The other thing was I've done consulting throughout my career at different periods, and you don't make any money unless you're working. And so I was like, I want to make money while I sleep. So my business model, my business model needs to allow me to do that. So I had all of this criteria around what I wanted my business to look like. It had to align with my values. It had to use my skills, you know, all of these things. I just didn't know what the business was. So when I saw a disconnect with the corporate world and what they were putting their logo on, I intuitively knew there was a business opportunity there. But my assumptions proved to be wrong around who the customer was, which is what you're talking about there. And so I just thought these companies that are talking about sustainability and spending tens of millions of dollars on sustainability were going to be my market. Kind of makes sense, right? And so when I, in 2010, threw up pretty well, I would call it an online brochure, and left it there, never did anything, never did any marketing, never did any outreach. And quite frankly, nobody even knew I owned this business in Cape Breton, because I didn't want anybody to think that I was using my other position in a way, because I was working for a Crown Corp.
Right.
And I didn't want anybody to think that I was using my position within a Crown Corporation to drive business to my private business. So I, no joke, never ever spoke about it. People didn't know it existed. I just had an online brochure up. But we got customers, and we'd sold to Yale University, and we'd sold to the Center of Human Rights. Like, we had universities, not-for-profits, governments had found us and bought from us. Wow. And then when I thought, okay, there's got to be something here, and I made actual calls and met with people that I thought our mission and values aligned very well with that, what their mission and values were around sustainability and ethical sourcing and all that sort of thing, I got absolutely no traction. And I was like, I don't want to sell swag. This isn't what I want to do. Like, I don't want to convince people they should buy swag. And that's when I did my research and I uncovered that my customer was very different from what I thought it was. And once I figured that out and I had that aha, right? And I really dug deep into what is motivating. Like, I literally did primary and secondary research. And my primary research is I called every single person that ever bought from Ethical Swag. And I asked them questions. How did you find us? Why did you find us? Who are you? Do you have any kids? Yeah. You know, like, I really did a real deep, because I wanted to understand who our customer was, who they were as a person, not as an organization. And it was really interesting. And once I started to see patterns, and once I realized, okay, now I know who my customer is, I redesigned everything that was Ethical Swag. And I developed all of our materials in a way that spoke to that customer. And we went live with the, you know, with a real website.
Right.
And we never advertised. All of a sudden, we just started getting sales.
Wow. So it was more weighted, do you find, Tara, toward who the person was who was actually reaching out to you, making that order? That was weighted heavier than the organization that they're a part of?
100%.
Wow.
Really, really interesting.
Yeah.
So they may or may not work for an organization that cares about sustainability, but what I did find was it aligned with them. So a lot of times the swag, the promotional product purchase is somebody in the marketing department, maybe a marketing coordinator, a marketing manager or something like that. These decisions aren't being made at the C-suite in the vast majority of companies.
Right.
Okay. There are those that have procurement policies around sustainable procurement that sort of are developed in the C-suite. But there is a huge sort of market out there where it's the marketing manager, the marketing coordinator. In some companies, it's even sort of the executive assistant. You know what I mean? Like, it's here's some money and we need some swag for the upcoming event, or here's some money, we need some swag for the employees. Right. And what I found was the folks that were empowered with that money wanted to source it ethically, regardless of whether or not it was a core mission or value of the organization.
What terrific insights. And of course, you did that research yourself, so it didn't cost you anything.
Oh, yeah. I formalized it. So I wrote up what my questions were. And I had some that were open-ended and others, you know, choose between the four options. Right. I conducted it myself. So I made every single phone call myself.
Wow.
And I used my analytical brain. You know, I'd set up the meeting and I'd say, I'd like to spend 30 minutes of your time. I have some questions. I'm doing some research, da-da-da. And I'd very formally go through the questions and have the open end and type up the answers. And then I compiled all that data. And that's when I saw sort of the pattern develop.
So the path forward was very clear at that point.
Oh, I think it was Oprah that says, you have your aha moment. I literally had my aha moment. And my husband was like, uh-oh, buckle up, people.
We're going to take off now.
Mom's figured it out.
Well, Tara, it's a great story. And I want to touch base a little bit about your ideas based on your experience around this whole space of doing business around ethics and sustainability. So as you've made your way along this journey the past couple of years, what have you learned about the opportunity that's in that space for entrepreneurs more broadly?
It's interesting because it is very sort of current right now, you know, the whole sustainability and the ethical sourcing and all that sort of thing. I've always felt like there was a disconnect on many levels in business, right? And you can call it sustainability, but I think of sustainability as it relates to the human sort of psyche as well. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I first started recognizing a disconnect between the business world and my personal world when I was expecting my first child, which was 23 years ago. And I was like, it's kind of an all or nothing, right? It's really hard to balance. We were living in Vancouver at the time. A couple of our kids were born in Vancouver. I was able to carve out a life when I first had my kids around a good balance. But what I found was on the playground, there was all of this amazing talent where there was men and women, but predominantly women, that had given up their careers so that they could be more present for their families. But they were kind of envious of the fact that I was able to carve out a balance. And I was like, what a waste. There's all these fabulous people that aren't in the workforce right now because the workforce is requiring them to be there too much.
Right.
So that was one sort of piece that I kind of put into my bucket. I'm going to create a business that looks different than that. And so I had all these things over the years that I said, okay, I want to create something that's different. And I've always used the word sustainable, but it's sustainable for our lives and our planet and, you know, all that sort of thing, right? So when I came up with Ethical Swag, I was like, this is the business that I can sort of create that has overall sustainability as it relates to planet, people, and purpose. Does that make sense? I don't know if that answered your question.
Yeah, no, and I think, well, and part of it is you've seen that there's a lot of talent out there because people might think it's, you know, mutually exclusive. You have to do one or the other, but there's ways that we can carve out balance if we're more creative about it. But also you mentioned something the other day when we chatted about, you know, and I know you're wisely keeping your team small and growing as you need to. And I think you're about to grow a little bit again now. And you're quite open and happy to have team members who live in, you know, maybe far-flung areas, far from where you are physically. What's your philosophy around that, about where your team members are working as you evolve?
You know, I live on Cape Breton Island. There's fabulous people here. And you know, I'd love to be able to hire people here, but I also recognize that there was going to be talent that I might need that might not be located here, that might not want to live this lifestyle. And I thought, well, that shouldn't matter. And so I had a vision for what I wanted this business to be. And part of that vision was the ability to hire for talent, regardless of location. So all the decisions that I made in that foundational work when I was first putting it together about 2.5 years ago, it was always with the vision of being able to hire for talent, not location.
Right.
So every decision I made around technology, every decision I made around policy, every decision I made, you know, it was always with that in mind. So you can do 100% of your job with a laptop only at Ethical Swag, regardless of what your position is.
Excellent. So that's probably where, what we're talking about in the future, right? As the economy develops for small business, especially in rural areas.
Oh, absolutely. I think so. And it's interesting because my first hire, she was working full-time permanently with an organization, and we were still in startup mode, right? So, you know, a little bit risky. And she quit her full-time job to come to Ethical Swag because she literally said to me, "You mean I could do this anywhere? Like if my husband was traveling on business and I wanted to jump in and go on his trip?" I'm like, "Yep, absolutely."
Wow.
And that was really appealing to her, right? Yeah. And she's done it several times. You know, he goes to Niagara for some meetings and she goes with him. And in the hotel room, she does her work all day while he's out at his meetings. And then in the evenings, they go out and have dinner and, you know, do different things.
Yeah.
And it's fabulous both ways, right?
Yeah. And those kind of quality of life elements, they can really compensate for as comparatively to higher salaries, right? Someone who's looking for that kind of balance could easily choose your offer over something that, you know, might have more money in the package.
Yeah. You know, potentially for sure. But I really want to make sure that everybody benefits within the organization as I grow, right? So that's really fundamental to the design of the business as well. I'm trying to develop an organization that's very flat versus hierarchical. I'm very team focused. I want to develop an organization where we kind of always have each other's backs. I'm hoping, and it's so far it's proving true, that we just cover for each other when we need to. And it was funny, a couple of weeks ago, I go to the gym early in the morning and I came back and there was a text from my production manager saying, "Okay, so some things have gone off the rails and I need you to cover for me." Da, 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 da. So I knew she was awake. It was before 8 o'clock in the morning and I phoned her up. I'm like, "Okay, take a breath. What's happened?"
Yeah.
And she's like, "Oh, well, you know, XYZ happened. I got to drive to Halifax." I said, "Halifax is a 5-hour drive. Why are you asking me to cover you for 2 hours? Like, that doesn't make any sense." And she said, "No, but there's not good cell network for about 2 hours." So,
oh, right.
She said, "I can pull over to the side of the road and I can hotspot my laptop and, you know, all this kind of stuff." And I just started to laugh. I'm like, "Get in your car, put on a great podcast. I'll take the day."
Wow.
Like, just don't worry about it. Go do what you need to do. Don't think about work. Download something onto your phone. Enjoy the drive. It's a beautiful day. And she started to laugh. She goes, "You've been to the gym and meditated today already, haven't you?"
But it almost sounds like, Tara, that you're nurturing an environment in which your team members treat it like it's their own business.
Oh my gosh, she is amazing. And our team is amazing. Like, I literally have to say, "Would you stop working now, please?"
Yeah, wow.
"This can happen tomorrow." Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But they're so enthusiastic about our mission and what we're doing. And it's fun. I have an internal website that is all things Ethical Swag. So anything that you want to sort of look up or figure out. We don't have a book because I do have office space, but you can choose to come in it or not. Mm. And so we have an online website that is our sort of go-to, we call it our wiki. And in there, the first thing it says is we're in a very important and serious industry around human rights and environmental stewardship.
Mm-hmm.
But if we can't be the funnest part of our customer's day, then we're doing it wrong because we're swag.
there's some nice balance. I like that combination. And, you know, I'm wondering about the money part because I have heard that women are less inclined to borrow big sums of money when they start a business than men may be inclined to do. But do I recall correctly, Tara, that you actually didn't borrow anything when you got started?
Yep.
How did you do it?
Debt. I believe in it.
So it's not like a business loan. You use some of your own, your own personal debt.
Yep. And also it was, it's salary wise, right? So I had a nice big six-figure salary and then I went to nothing. Well, nothing gets you hungrier than doing
that. Yeah, that's a motivator. That's a motivator for sure.
Definite motivator. But I also so believed in it that I was like, it was interesting. It's easy for me to say now, but at the time, I will be honest, I kept getting offered contracts to do some consulting. I would, mm-hmm. I do have sort of varied experience. I'd get calls and it was kind of tempting. I got to be honest. When I first sort of went out on my own, I did take a contract with a monthly retainer and thought, okay, well, I'll do ethical swag on the side. And then I kind of came to the realization that it's really hard to do one thing really well. I'm not going to do a lot of things. Yeah. Ethical swag's always going to fall to the bottom of the pile. And I had to get comfortable with making no money. And I had to get comfortable with going in debt. Because that's kind of what you do when you're an entrepreneur, if you really believe in it, right?
Yeah. And that's the key. You have to really believe in it.
100%. And it didn't happen overnight. I did have ethical swag off to the side for 7 years before I took the leap of faith. And it wasn't until I did that really sort of specific research and got a really clear focus around who, what, how, that I went, okay, now I got to jump into the deep end without my life jacket on and we just got to swim.
Yeah, and exactly. Well, and Terry, you've given us, lots of advice from your experience. So I'm just going to kind of put it to you a little differently. So for some of our listeners who might be thinking about going down a similar path, what advice do you have for others, particularly in small communities, who may be thinking about starting their own business and would definitely rely on connecting with people far and wide, as you have done, to make it work, and maybe starting with little or no money? In particular, are there any pitfalls that you would recommend people are looking out for and try to avoid?
So, hindsight being 2020, the best thing I could have done was do what I did back in 2010. I identified the business, I came up with a name, I incorporated and I got the URL, but did nothing else. Mm-hmm. So, I didn't have to have everything perfect and I didn't have to have all my ducks lined up and all that kind of thing. It was more, oh, there's an opportunity. Oh, here's a name. Oh, here, it was no risk because I wasn't planning on making it how we pay the mortgage, right? But I saw it there. And hindsight being 2020, it's the best thing I could have ever done. I have calls from people going, how did you ever get that name?
Yeah, the name is perfect.
Because the name is perfect for our timing. You spoke about sort of the timing around sustainability right now. In 2010, people thought it was nuts.
Ah.
Like nuts. I had suppliers going, so you're telling me that you're only going to source ethical products? I'm like, yep. And they're like, you'll be bankrupt. Because it wasn't really a thing back then, right? It
was almost, you were a bit of a visionary, Tara.
It was more that, I guess my advice to anybody listening is if your gut tells you there's some opportunity there, don't wait until you got it all figured out.
Just
because incremental steps is okay too. And so the things that I've really learned in this journey was, okay, it's okay to just do a little bit while you still have your full-time job and three kids and homeless parents, because my parents, it didn't let it not let me do anything. But I also didn't say, oh, I can't do the whole thing, so therefore I'm not going to do anything. Because it was by doing that that's led me to where I am now. You got to, at some point, do the real work. But sometimes if you have an idea, don't let it just stay as an idea in your brain. Do a couple of things that sort of put it out there. And the market will tell you whether or not there's something there.
Yeah, you can do a real life test that doesn't cost much or maybe nothing.
I think that's so important that you do that. And, this is hindsight. There's too many people that try and build the perfect business and then go out and see if anybody wants it.
Right. And you've already invested a lot of time and money by that point.
Exactly. And then you're kind of like, oh, I got to make it work. I got to make it work. Whereas mine was more like I intuitively thought, there's an opportunity. It's an old, old industry. Like, I'm no Bill Gates. I'm no Oprah Winfrey. I knew I was never going to come up with the next best widget or idea. Like, I wasn't going to invent anything. But there is opportunities in our daily lives everywhere that can take a modern today kind of slant or, you know, approach. So keep your eyes open all the time for ideas, and then don't think you've got to do everything out of the gates perfectly. Get out there. Right. So if that makes any sense. So like, if you think you want a cottage, at some point, just put a shed up and see if you, you know, don't go and build a big house yet.
Yeah.
Because you might not like living in the woods.
Yeah. And you don't need to bankrupt yourself, you know, right away in the first 30 days. You can start small and test some ideas. Yeah. Because the power in business today, I think, is about ideas. So if you have a great idea, it's worth, you know, taking a little time to explore it more fully, test it a little bit.
Oh, and your point is exactly right. Test it. And so an idea just in and of itself is kind of worthless, right? It's whether or not somebody wants to buy that idea.
Right.
So have your idea, but then also see if anyone actually wants to buy it, without spending too much money trying to figure that out. I threw up an online brochure and we had a sale to Yale University.
Yeah, that's an amazing story. It's an amazing example of the truth in that lesson.
Yeah, it's just, you just don't know. And it was the insight into, was it Yale University or was it that individual? And I found it was the individual that found
you dug
us.
In a little further. Yeah, scratch the surface, find out where it's really coming from.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, that's terrific. You've given us a ton to think about for the entrepreneurs among us in rural Canada today, Tara, and I thank you for that. We'll be interested to see where Ethical Swag goes. I think it's a terrific story, and myself, like I'm sure some others on the line, look forward to meeting you someday in person.
Oh, thanks, Helen. So it's been my pleasure.
Okay, we'll talk again. Thanks again.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Bye-bye.
And thanks to all of you for joining us this week. The Rural Spark team includes content producer Catherine Murphy and technical producer Tara Seabarth. Music by Jason Shaw. We wish you all the very best for the week ahead in your part of rural Canada.